Wardrobe malfunction here. Let me just take my mask off. Okay, so thank you, Dion and Chris and David. One of our cats is back today, Chris Kimbler. For those of you who don't know, we call our band Chris Kimbler and the Cats, and some of the cats moved away during the pandemic, so we have Chris Kimbler and the cat now. All right, so, you know, I know Mark really well, our guest speaker, Reverend Mark. He's doing an interview with me, and I know him really well, but yet I wrote down a few notes just to make sure that I got it right, and then I forgot to check it with you, so there you go. Please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Just holler out. None of them are all shy about hollering out, so you might as well just jump right in as well. So Mark is an American, but he's also Canadian, and he's also French. He's half... Well, you lived in Canada. Okay. So you see how this is going to go? Okay. And he speaks French fluently. Taught me how to say guinea pig in French, which not a lot of people know, I have to tell you. Anyway, so Mark was trained as an actor, but he also spent many years in the business sector, and that's, I knew him when he was a businessman, a big, high-powered businessman. And then he was the assistant minister at North Hollywood Church of Religious Science, which is where I started as well. We were staff ministers together first, and then he was an assistant minister, and he was there for what, 15 years or so? 15, 16 years? Yeah. 20 including years. Staff minister. Yeah. Mark and I became extremely close friends in ministerial school, and in fact, some might call us conjoined twins because we were joined at the hip. We did everything together. We laughed together. We prayed together. We've been prayer partners for years. We've supported each other in spirituality, and we've also supported each other in quite a bit of mischief over the years. Recently, I got the honor of doing Mark's wedding. He married his husband, Joe, who couldn't be here today, but it was such a blessing to participate in that wedding, to facilitate it. And Mark and I have made a solemn vow to each other that we are going to do each other's funerals. Don't know how that's going to work out, but we're going to do it. I wanted to tell you a brief story that sort of encapsulates the quality of our relationship, and I hope this is okay with you. So Mark and I were talking about him coming to speak, and we went over what we might talk about, and then Mark, being who he is, you know, wanted to make sure that he was dressed appropriately because he is very fastidious. And so he's saying to me, okay, so probably not a suit and tie in your church, but I don't know, I've got this turquoise shirt, and I'll wear that, and maybe this sort of light jacket, and then, I don't know, maybe pants? And I go, maybe pants? What do you think this is, Mark? So with that, pants and all, let's give Reverend Mark LaPonce a warm welcome. Thank you.
Wow. Good crowd.
Yeah, this is pretty good for post-pandemic.
And Dion, why haven't I heard of you before? Wow,
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, Dion's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Chris, I already knew how talented you are.
Yeah. And that's David.
David, nice, so nice to have you with us.
Would you like to talk about the band some more?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, I can tell you that David was with the Mothers of Invention. He was a well-known bassist. And Dion has had quite a wonderful career. And I don't, you probably do get tired of hearing this, but you sound so much like Johnny Mathis to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to have you sing a Johnny. I listen to Johnny Mathis almost every day, and I love Johnny Mathis. Yeah, so we'll talk. Maybe not in front of all these people, but, you know, we'll talk. So anyway, Mark, let's get right down to brass tacks. So one of the reasons I invited Mark to come is that Mark has trained so many practitioners, and I would say that he is really an expert in the way, in our teaching, and also in the way that we pray, because a practitioner's primary function in our center is to pray. That's one of, they do a lot of different things, but that's really the calling of a practitioner, is to be the healing art. I was going to say the heart and the arm, so mm-hmm. It came out as art. But the healing arm or the healing heart of a spiritual center. So Mark is going to give us just a brief description of how he teaches practitioners to pray and what a prayer in this denomination is. Mm-hmm. Would you do that for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I always like to start off with explaining over and over again that our founder, Ernest Holmes, came up with a specific prayer technique that he thought was very effective, but we really like to emphasize that he never said this is the only way to pray. Mm-hmm. So I loved what Hugh's reading this morning, because, you know, there's a little fundamentalist in all of us, I think, that we like to believe we found the way to do something, and there's only that one way that works. So I want to start off by saying that. But probably many of us grew up in traditions where we basically either asked God for things, we begged God for things, or we bargained with God for
all
things.
All of the above. Yeah.
And none of that is wrong. Okay, I want to say that right off the bat. None of that, would we say, cannot result in you getting a demonstration to your prayer. But Ernest Holmes designed this, what he considered a scientific form of prayer, whereby, since we believe that God is ever-present in every moment, in everything, that when we're not experiencing some aspect of God's nature in our life, it's not because it's not there, it's because we're not seeing it. Our consciousness isn't open to it. And so he designed a 5-step prayer process. I'm sure many of you are aware of this. That begins with first step is knowing that God is all there is. And then logically then, if God is all there is, then God must be in me. Mm-hmm. If God is in me, if God is in everything, then the next logical step, which we call realization.
Unification.
Second is unification. Oh. God is in me. Sorry, I didn't name that step.
Yeah.
Sorry. So the second step is called unification. The third one is, since God is in me, the realization that whatever it is I'm praying for must already be there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I'm praying for greater abundance, there must already be abundance in me. But I'm trying to grow my consciousness to see it and accept it and experience it. And then the next step is, okay, when I've really convinced myself of that truth, when I've felt it on some level, I need to trust that there is a greater presence than me, my ego, that's acting upon my word to bring it forth into manifestation. So I release my word into that law that says yes to what it is, the consciousness that I'm growing into. And then, before that, I give thanks, as if I already have it. Sorry, I did skip a step, didn't I?
I was trying not to jump in, but
I give thanks, which came from, you know, straight from scripture, actually, that we should give thanks as if it's already happened. So again, we're convincing ourselves that this good that I seek is already there. And then, yes, I release my word, just knowing that there's this divine law that's acting on it, that there's an intelligence greater than my ego, than my rational mind, that's making this happen. I can just trust. So.
I give thanks.
Don't I do a great job?
That was awesome. I give thanks.
I skip steps.
Yeah, yeah. I give thanks that you forgot to give thanks, because I sometimes do too. So, you know, again. Yeah, it was a beautiful description, and it's so interesting how everybody describes the way that we pray a little bit differently, and I just love your definition of it. And it makes it sound so easy and wonderful, and yet the name of this talk is Did Your Prayer Get Stuck? Now that comes from a very specific story that Mark has told us, and it's actually part of one of our curriculums here that I wrote. And so some of you may be familiar with this story, but Mark tells it much better than me. So will you tell us the story about Did Your Prayer Get Stuck?
So this was before I became a minister. I was a practitioner, and the practitioner teacher that year for practitioner two studies had another engagement one night and asked if I would step in for that evening to teach a class. And so we did our spiritual practice, as we do in the beginning, and then we opened it up to the students, saying, you know, anything you want to discuss before we move on with tonight's lesson. And one of the students raised her hand and said, what do you think about a minister, a science of mind minister, who does not release their word into the law of mind? And I asked, well, can you give me an example? She said, I was at a memorial service at a religious science community, Center for Spiritual Living community, and the minister was at a memorial, and the minister, when she did the prayer for the person who had made their transition, she did not say, I release my word into the law of mind. And, you know, being the very serious individual that I am, couldn't resist just saying, oh my God, that prayer got stuck. It's never going to happen. Again, proving that there's a little fundamentalist in all of us. So I love that while Hugh was reading about, you know, in Catholic school, some people may have been worried after their Catholic training that they weren't praying correctly. We can all feel that way, right? Have you ever felt like you must not be praying correctly because your prayers aren't being answered?
Yes, yeah. Yes, or doing something wrong, prayer or something else, right? Because it's not working for me. My magic wand isn't working anymore, right?
Yeah.
You ever felt that way?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, not so much anymore, but yeah, in the past.
Sometimes, even today. I'll be humble. What am I not doing?
Yeah, mine's not so much around prayer. Mine's more around other things. But anyway, we'll get to that another time. So the poor dead guy's prayer got stuck.
Absolutely. So we decided to release it right then and there.
Okay, good to know. Good. So he got to go wherever.
We unlocked it.
Yeah, good. Yeah. So in telling that story about all of us wondering whether or not we're doing it wrong or doing, you know, it seems like it's almost bigger than doing prayer wrong. It's doing life wrong. Like if we were doing life wrong, if we were good enough Buddhists or Christians or Muslims or religious scientists or whatever, then our life would flow beautifully and everything would be perfect and we'd be at peace all the time. But in the bigger context of that, you know, let's say we are praying in whatever faith we have, and a prayer doesn't feel like it's working. We're not getting the results that we want. You know, it feels like we're trying so hard and we're just really, really working and we're doing, it feels like we quote unquote should be doing everything right, but we're not doing something right because if we were, it would be working. So yeah. What does it mean to you? Like if a prayer isn't coming into manifestation as you would want it, what do you think that's about?
Well, I wish I had a pat answer. So I think one of the first things I would say is for us to recognize Ernest Holmes, our founder, told us to stay open at the top, meaning that we never know everything. Mm-hmm. And so part of it is, you know, there's something I'm probably not understanding fully yet that I need to open to. But here's what's helped me a lot. I do love that our philosophy keeps emphasizing that God isn't a presence. Unconditional love, which is the nature of God, is not a presence that holds back, mm-hmm. right? Unconditional love is always just seeking to give. Mm-hmm. So if I can get myself in the right frame of mind around when my prayers are not manifesting, what helps me is to realize there's something I'm just not seeing right now mm-hmm. with my consciousness. You mm-hmm. know, there's mm-hmm. something that needs to expand and not to beat myself up, you know, not to say I'm doing it wrong, but, you know, sometimes consciousness, like anything else, growth can be incremental. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a student of yoga, you don't, you know, go into that pose like the yogi that's teaching the class. If it's your first time, you have to build up to it. But every time.
Sorry, you may go into it. You may never get out of it.
Exactly. Right. You know, you stretch to a certain point, but then that's as far as you can go in that moment. And it helps me to kind of use that as an analogy mm-hmm. because in those times where, especially if it's something that's been really important to me, it's been helpful to me to tell myself there's something I'm just not seeing, but I know that the solution is there. I know mm-hmm. that the answer is there. Mm-hmm. God isn't withholding anything from me. I'm not being bad. It's not my past that's, you know, I was bad on Wednesday, therefore I can't have the good I want today, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So.
Were you bad on Wednesday?
I was.
What did you do? That's far more interesting.
We'll talk later.
But you know what I'm hearing in that too, and what I want to encourage, and this is for me, and I'm hoping it blesses others, is even in the saying, there's something in that I'm not seeing, there can be some self-shaming in that. Like, yeah. I should be seeing this by now. I'm praying, I'm a religious science minister, I'm a religious science practitioner, I attend a religious science church, I should be seeing this. Oh, by the way, I'm human, I should be seeing this. And really, what if it was different? What if it was like, oh, wow, I'm not seeing something yet, and the reason I'm not seeing it is that it's because it's a surprise. It's something that's so much greater than my human binary operating system can think up, but it's something that is greater than my consciousness that's you know, metaphorically tapping at my window saying, yoo-hoo, over here. So it's not a matter of shame, it's a matter of openness to the surprise.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's, yeah.
I like to use the analogy too of, does anyone ever look at those, I don't know if they even have them in the newspaper anymore, those 3D little pictures, they used to put them in the LA Times, where it just looks like a bunch of dots, but you have to stare at it in a certain way, you have to be willing to kind of relax your vision, all of a sudden you'll see a 3D image. Mm-hmm. Now sometimes I'm looking at that, and I'm really excited about, wait, if I could just adjust my vision, I'm going to see something totally unexpected. And then other times, I'm telling myself, I should be able to see this.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the consciousness that we bring to.
Yes.
So that makes a big difference.
And honestly, what you just described, even about seeing the 3D dots and also looking at in the bigger context of, you know, I should get this by now, isn't that a release as well? You know,
yeah,
right? Nice. It's a relaxation.
Yeah.
If you're staring so hard to see the dots, or if we're staring so hard to see the solution, that's often what's pushing the solution away. You know,
nice.
Pushing
nice
the answer
like
away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Do you have a situation or a story in your life where you were trying really hard to see the dots, or you were answering a prayer and it wasn't happening, and something had to shift in your consciousness?
Well, probably the most poignant one for me, and I know you were part of the process because, mm-hmm. as Reverend Bonnie said earlier, we've been prayer partners for a long time. So
yeah.
I think it was actually your prayers that helped. But so years ago, my mother was still alive. She had had a stroke, and it was a significant stroke that left her, even though she made a lot of progress, but it did leave her confined to a wheelchair, very speech impaired, and she did not have the kind of funds to be able to afford assisted living, which is something that she really needed. And she lived for a period of time with my husband and myself. She stayed with my sister and her family for a while, but my mom had always been independent. It just, for her to depend on her children, you know, maybe she could have accepted it at some point, but I just knew it would mean so much to her to have some kind of independent living. And looking at assisted living facilities, even, you know, if we tried to chip in, there was just nothing that seemed affordable. Mm-hmm. And I remember my husband at that time, one time when we were having coffee one morning, I was just talking to him, and he told me later, he said, I'm just so touched by the way you keep saying, I know there's a solution. I know there's a solution. I just need to be willing to see it. And at that time, it really wasn't a shaming thing. It was more of a desperation. I'm open, please, Spirit, reveal it to me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was what surfaced was we found an independent, so it was an assisted living facility near West Hollywood, where Joe and I were living at the time. On the outside, I mean, the paint was peeling off the patio. The biggest activity was that some of the residents sat out on the patio smoking, putting their cigarette butts into coffee cans. My mom had always been really conscious of making our home really cozy and nice. And so when I saw this place, it was affordable. It was actually affordable. They took the minimum Social Security payment and just a couple of extra, a few hundred dollars more for her to have a private room. And at first I thought, how could I put my mom in this facility? But as I felt the vibration of the caring of all the caregivers, as I stayed with that feeling of, I want my mom to live in dignity, I want her to have a place that's cozy, you know, like she's always made home a cozy place for us. The next thing I know, I have our mutual friend, Matt Comp, who's now on the other side of the veil, but he was a interior designer, coming and telling me to get a piece of butter and take it to a hardware store to have them match the color of butter, which the gay son, of course, was more than happy to do. And everything that we could do, we made that room so cozy. The caregivers, very soon she was everyone's mamacita. A few years later, my mom was saying, I hope I can be here when it's my time to move on. And had I not stayed with that feeling of what is it that it feels like, that I'm looking for my mom, because I saw some beautiful assisted living places that were completely unaffordable. And I wanted to force the law to, you know, give me the money to afford one of those places. Mm-hmm. We got better. We got a better solution than any of those places would have been based on the care that she received.
So can I tell you what I hear in that?
Sure.
So much good stuff, man. So much good stuff. So the idea of judging by appearances,
yeah.
You know, I have to paraphrase it because I keep misquoting it in church and I keep meaning to look it up and I haven't done it yet, but but this thing from the Gospel of Thomas where they talk about where the inner becomes the outer and the outer becomes the inner. And in this case, you were able to see the inner beauty of what's going on, even of the inner beauty of the care that she would receive, the inner beauty, the joy of the gay son going with a pat of butter down to what?
Coons Hardware.
Yeah, like that happens every day. I mean, that's like a mystery. God thought that one up, right? Through our beloved friend Matt Comp. You know, all of these mysteries converging together to create this experience. That's the inner world, and then the inner becomes the outer. You know, we can as the mysteries converge on the inner, then the outer becomes as beautiful as the inner. And sometimes it goes the other way too. Sometimes we look at a piece of art, and the outer inspires the inner. But there's this incredible synergy between what we're calling the inside and the outside, because truly there is no inside and there's no outside.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, when you were saying that, I could piggyback on that, because going to the other assisted living places that I saw the beauty, and you know, there's some really, really nice. I kind of was tempted to move in
too.
And be cared for.
I hear you.
But it gave me so those places and thinking about them helped me to feel the vibration of what it was I was looking for outwardly.
Yes, yes.
But then I had to be willing to accept it in a different form. And, you know, I've had situations too where it was a matter of, I was telling myself, oh, this just isn't possible. Mm-hmm. But allowing myself to just stay with the feeling, I got exactly what I wanted. It looked exactly like what I had wanted. But we have to be willing, I think, to accept it either this way and stop telling ourselves it's not possible, or it might look completely different from what I can conceive right now, but if I stretch my consciousness.
Right, right. And I loved what you said also about the vibrations, that you got the vibration of something, and yet it wasn't in polished floors or recreational directors doing, you know, chair Olympics or whatever people do in assisted living homes, and it manifested in, again, into that what I was talking about before, that little, you know, again, I speak in metaphors, so forgive me. I don't really believe God has a finger you know. That little finger tapping at your window saying, oh, I got something better for you. Look over here. Look over here. Work on your vibration. Raise your vibration to something. And you don't even have to know what it is. But if you just trust holiness, if you just trust wholeness, if we just trust that there is what it said in the reading, there is this presence of love that so wants to express in every single aspect of our lives, then that allows that wholeness and that holiness to come through and in express ways that you or I, in all of those prayers that we did, you know,
right.
It wasn't a prayer like, I now know that Mark is going to a place where people are smoking cigarettes on a patio, and that will be the one. No, it's so far beyond our imagination because we're dealing with an infinite force. We're dealing with that you know, that clear consciousness that we pour our individualized consciousness into to create something wonderful or to create something that feels like the opposite of wonderful. And I'll tell you a little secret here that comes up in all of the classes that I teach, particularly this one right now about the wisdom Jesus, which is about mystical non-duality, is that even if we're pouring in something that seems like it's not wonderful, it becomes a portal for that which is wonderful and amazing and powerful. At any moment, our life can change. At any moment, you know, there's this whole thing about the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and you know, Cynthia Bourgeau talks a lot about that in the traditional reading of many Christian scriptures. There's this idea that the kingdom of heaven is a place, it's a destination place where you get to go if you're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember to release on your fifth step, if you're not bad on Wednesdays, you know. But it's not that. It's the kingdom of heaven is within, and it's at hand, and it's right now, and it's a shift of consciousness. It's taking on the mind of Christ, which is the mind of wholeness, which is the mind that knows that the word Christ is another name for everything, and that there's this omnipresent, ever-present reality that is love, that is kindness, that is wholeness, that is inclusivity, that is in everything. Do you see? See, I'm getting all excited now. I'm preaching, baby. Do you see how inclusive that was, what you did?
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for
I'm serious. I mean, you could have, it's like rejecting a person because they don't look like you think how they should look.
Yeah.
You were in the process thinking about rejecting a place because it didn't look like how you thought it should look.
Right.
And then look what you did. Look what you did, Mark.
Yay, Bonnie. Well,
Mark, you
prayed with me. That's
we'll continue to deflect our compliments for an hour.
We can
go on and on with that.
No,
but you did it.
It's exciting. And really, the thing is spirit. Did it. It was
spirit
opening
did.
Up to
yeah.
spirit.
Yeah.
And that's why, and I want to interject here, is that's why the asking prayer, the beseeching prayer, the bargaining prayer can also work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love reminding, when I teach prac class, I love reminding my students of a documentary I watched where I guess there was an area in the world where there was conflict, war going on. Imagine that. And Mother Teresa told this group of people, you need to be ready to move in to get medical supplies and food and things to these people on a specific day. She said, I have prayed to the Virgin Mary. I have promised her, you know, whatever prayers she promised to do. And it's going to happen this day. She made it clear to me. And people were looking at her like, okay, but they knew it was Mother Teresa, so they got ready just in case, and guess what happened that very day? Why? Because that was her process, I believe, of opening up to the possibility, to the kingdom that God holds for all of us. That was her way. That worked for her consciousness. And if you think we as Science of Mind ministers don't ever ask or just prostrate ourselves. Have to be really careful with that word.
Yeah.
Completely.
And you're sitting next to a nurse.
Yeah.
So okay.
But just
this happens with us. Yeah.
Just to say, you know, Spirit, please show me, because in that moment I'm believing that there is a greater presence and intelligence than what my rational mind mm-hmm. is conceiving right now
mm-hmm.
that can work for me, through me, and around me.
Mm-hmm. You know what I hear you saying in that?
What do you hear me say? I would love to know.
Okay, good. I'm going to tell you about yourself right now, and I have to do it with a New York accent because that's who I was back then. No, I just hear that's Mother Teresa's form of release. Like, release is more than a word that you say at the end of a prayer. Release is really a way of life. You know, and I'm thinking, I don't know if any of those people up there I'm not sure that they released, you know? But look what they did. I mean, Ernest Holmes, he didn't have the release step when he first made up prayer, right?
I don't even know.
I don't think he did.
I know he didn't in the beginning. He didn't have Thanksgiving either.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done with him then. No, but I don't think any of those people released. And you know, again, release is so much more than a word. It's an attitude, and it's an attitude of this horrifying word that we say in this church a lot, that the ego never wants to hear, but it's the best word in the world, and that is surrender. Mm-hmm. And it's the only reason it's a horrifying word is that we forget to whom or to what we are surrendering. Yeah. We think we're surrendering to the God of our hindsight 2020 vision, that Cynthia mm-hmm. Bourgeau calls it, the God that we learned about as children, the God that looks often like a punitive parent, right? If any of us grew up with difficult parents, we think we're surrendering to that, but we're surrendering to something much greater. We're surrendering to something that is, it doesn't only love us, it is love itself. It is love beyond love. It is love beyond what we can imagine. And it is love that is just so, so profound and so deep. It's bigger than our small brains. And if we can just surrender to that and allow that in, then life just becomes magnificent. No matter what the appearance, life is magnificent all the time because we are magnificent all the time inside. That's what
beautiful.
I see in that. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Mark, we're almost done.
Okay.
It went quick, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah. So, is there anything, Mark just retired, and I'm just wondering, as a congregation, is there anything that we can do to support you?
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and you will release your prayers, right?
From now on. The release police will come and get you.
just, you know, it's a new phase of life. I felt called into it. I felt somewhat pushed. I could see that my energy and there's a phase of life where things suddenly seem to take longer and you can't seem to quite keep going in the way you did before, but that started to open up possibilities for me and my husband and our life. I will always stay connected to Science of Mind communities and, you know, that's going to be part of my life forever. But I would just say for continued openness to all the possibilities of what life holds for me.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely would love you knowing that Joe and I can travel to France soon and feel comfortable doing so because we've decided next time we're there with my family, we're going for several months, not several weeks.
nice.
And the perfect caregiver for Chloe to stay, or my little parrot, to be with when we are away.
Okay, we will pray for that for you. And if there was one thing that you really want us to know from this teaching that you've done for us today so graciously, what's the one thing you really want us to know?
Well, it's what I want to know. So let's all know together, God, this vibration is always for us. It's always for us. It's never against us when we surrender. That's why we are willing to surrender to it when we remember that, rather than being afraid that, you know, there's that shoe that's going to drop if we don't do it right.
Right.
Yeah, definitely for us to keep remembering that love is always for us.
Mm, that's wonderful. One more quick question. I can't control myself. How do you say release in French?
It's je lâche.
Je lâche.
So I'm holding something, je lâche.
Je lâche.
But I don't know that we would say it that way. Mm-hmm. I'd have to find out what word they use for that in when they're doing spiritual. I've never done a spiritual mind treatment in French.
You want to do one now? No, I'm kidding. You don't have to. I'll do one.
Je peux commencer, puis tu continues.
How do you say guinea pig in French? How do you say guinea pig
cochon
in French?
D'Inde.
Cochon d'Inde is guinea pig. How do you say I love you?
Je t'aime.
Je
vous aime.
Je
if you're, if it's someone that you don't know as well, but je t'aime. If it's
so, say it to them.
Je vous aime because you're more than one person. But we're all one.
Je vous aime too.
Je vous aime beaucoup.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. Thanks.